Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. We spend the half hour with singer-songwriter David Rovics. He has shared the stage with leading intellectuals such as Howard Zinn, Noam Chomsky, as well as activists and artists like Billy Bragg, the Indigo Girls, Martin Sheen, or Susan Sarandon. And he's been called the musical voice of the progressive movement in the U.S.
I walk down the sidewalk, past Powell Boulevard, past the men with 40-ouncers, passed out in the yard. There's a boy of 7 years, gazing at the sky, with dreams of far-off places, wishing he could fly away to join his father. Wherever he may be, they say he went back east, somewhere near New York City. And I think that I'm the luckiest guy on this planet, so it seems, the luckiest guy in a world of broken dreams, the luckiest guy in a world of broken dreams. All I wanted were good things, land and liberty, and all the sorts of things we learned at the university. I'm not a fan of dictatorships, I'd rather say live and let live. But for those who threaten my family, there's nothing I won't give. I will fight for my country. I'll defend this land. From every corner of the world, they came from all around. When in 1851 they struck gold upon the ground, every voyage was a long one, months upon the stormy sea. Some to seek their fortune, others escaping slavery. What they found on the gold fields was rule by brutish thugs, discrimination and taxation mixed with swinging billy clubs. The
gold. On September 21st, David Rovics shared the stage in Middletown, Connecticut at Wesleyan University's Memorial Chapel with journalist Dar Jamail in Connecticut on a book tour to discuss his second book, The Will to Resist: Soldiers Who Refused to Fight in Iraq and Afghanistan. Dar Jamail's first book was Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Occupied Iraq.
There's a story that just broke about a leaked Pentagon report. It was leaked to the Washington Post, basically about how General Stanley McChrystal, he is the U.S. general in charge of all forces in Afghanistan, including NATO forces. And a leaked report basically showing him giving this really, really grim picture of the situation so bad in Afghanistan that if we don't get a whole lot more American troops in there really, really quick, then basically we're under threat of losing control of the entire situation. And really, I think this is preparatory propaganda to kind of soften the blow for when the request for between 20 and 40,000 troops comes. Because it's going to come, and it's going to come soon, and then there's going to be more following that. So I think it's kind of just like you have to get people ready, kind of the drip technique of like, so that when that real request comes, and then when it's followed through, as Barack Obama certainly will follow through and give them whatever they ask for. But it has to be couched first, and oh, well, we're going to have this big debate, and you have to prove that you really need these troops, et cetera, et cetera, when in reality the decision's already been made. There will be 69,000 troops in Afghanistan by the end of December, and I'll be shocked if there's not over 100,000 by the end of next year. This is the first step in making that happen.
We'll be airing the audio of Dar Jamail's speeches at talks that were sponsored by Promoting Enduring Peace and other organizations in upcoming broadcasts. David Rovics, welcome.
Thank you, Dori.
Have I been hearing about a three-continent tour?
It's more like three different tours on three different continents, but I guess it could be they're sort of continuous, but there's breaks in between in Portland, so not quite all one tour.
You've been in Australia latest. How is everything going in Australia?
Oh, I had a wonderful time there in Australia and in New Zealand. Lots of great shows and lots of great audiences. I'd never been to Australia or New Zealand until last winter or their summer, but I always suspected it was a natural place to play if you're singing in English. Certainly a great place to go tour. And a lot of people don't make it over there, you know, if they're from Europe or North America or something. So I think a lot of folks there are just particularly pleased when there's an international artist touring there, because it's a bit of a commitment to go all the way to Australia.
You get a little bit of singing along going on in America. Does that happen in Europe too?
Yeah, it does. But it seemed to be a tradition that I sort of introduced to a lot of folks in Scandinavia that I don't think ever had done that before. But a lot of sort of punk rockers and stuff, you know, black-clad, face-pierced, you know, punk rockers in places like Copenhagen who, you know, singing along to sort of hillbilly music wasn't really their thing until they heard me, but now they do it.
I wonder if you could describe your own style for listeners who may not be familiar with your music, David Rovix. It's political, it's folk, it's a little bluegrassy, it's some rock in there. I mean, that's just my impression. How would you describe
it? Yeah, definitely all those influences. And I'm a singer-songwriter, and the songs that I write, I guess, stylistically tend to be somewhere in the realm between bluegrass and punk rock. Probably closer to bluegrass, depending on whether you're into... But if a punk rocker might say it sounds like bluegrass, but a bluegrass musician would say it sounds kind of punk rock, you know. So it probably depends on the song. But the best thing is to just go to davidrovix.com and listen to it for yourself and decide what kind of music it is.
Well, Cindy Sheehan, the peace activist and bereaved mother, of course, we tend to sometimes forget that she's a Gold Star mother who lost
Absolutely.
Her son, Casey, in Iraq early on in the war. She says that your music, she calls you a peace poet and troubadour of our time. Seems right to me.
Very kind words that Cindy spoke. I'll be doing a show with Cindy in a couple days, actually.
And where will that be?
In Dallas, Texas, with her and Tom Hartman and David Swanson.
Well, David Swanson, we know, Washington director of Democrats.com, he's got a new book out, Daybreak, about what real change in America might look like. And we'll be interviewing David Swanson soon. There are emerging changes in America's political climate right now. Maybe we're seeing a little bit more unity over some key issues. Now, would you say you're picking up on that, even though you've been in Europe or on tour lately?
Unity? I don't know. What I'm seeing in the U.S. is that society is very polarized, and there's a lot of people who are brainwashed by Fox News and such, and then there's the rest of the population. The sort of vitriol and insanity of the right-wing protesters against Obama have just sort of taken me a bit by surprise. I mean, I shouldn't be surprised. I grew up in this country, but people talking about they're going to, you know, euthanize grandma and stuff, and it's really just pretty incredible. And in terms of the unity on the left or among progressives, we need it. I don't know if we've got it. Naturally, I guess there's a bit of a uncertainty about how to proceed, because you don't want to divide the progressive movement and give the right more influence by doing so, and at the same time, you can't sit still and let the U.S., you know, Obama and the government send more troops to Afghanistan and pass a health care bill that doesn't actually do what it needs to do. And there's a lot of big changes that absolutely need to be made, and it's going to take people on the streets and a mass movement to make those changes. Ultimately, yeah, I wouldn't say that the left is terribly united at this point. We haven't had a major anti-war protest in years. It's not a very good state of affairs, really.
I guess you're accusing me of wishful thinking, David.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I'd say the left is doing really just fine in Venezuela and Bolivia, but not so much in the U.S. or Europe. You know, there's a serious right-wing resurgence in Europe going on. And I mean, we shouldn't fool ourselves by the fact that we had a Democrat elected. The right wing is very much in power in the United States. I mean, depending on how we define these things, but both parties are corporate parties, and they're, you know, running us into the ground and together, cooperatively. And in Europe, you know, there's been xenophobic right-wing parties getting elected all over the place, and that's very discouraging. The hope for me is in activists are wonderful people, and they're all over the world, and so I have a fine life amongst them. But I think in terms of real hope for serious social change going in the right direction, you got to look to South America right now.
I remember when we met, surrounded by police. Was a one block in the city where protest was allowed, and they were there to keep peace. You said, hey, my name is Brad, and I think we surely will mess up these meetings. These jokers will remember us in this city on the hill. I'd see you at the rallies, guitar on your knee. The calm inside the storm, from Prague to San Francisco, Miami to D.C. We traveled on the same roads, you were everywhere. With a smile on your face, in the redwood forest, to the streets of Tompkins Square. I'll go down to the water, and with the morning dew.
Can you describe a little bit more about the message that you feel like sharing right now about events in the world? That's your theme for your songwriting, your lyrics. What's the thing most on your mind, David Rovix?
It's very broad, but what's always on my mind and what I'm always writing about in one way or another are different aspects of that we live with in this world and we've lived with for several thousand years now. That the world is just really fundamentally and horrendously divided between the haves and the have-nots. There's, a couple hundred million people, a few hundred million people living relatively like kings, and then billions of people living just barely hand-to-mouth or not living at all. That is the characteristic of life on Earth that defines history of humanity and defines pretty much everything that happens in the world today, and ultimately it comes down to who's trying to control everything and who's just trying to get by. We've got to understand that this world is divided that way, and we've got to understand that the only way forward is to stand with those that have nothing. That's what's always on my mind.
One more song that I'm very much looking forward to hearing Dar speak. I've heard him speak before, and I've heard him on the radio I don't know how many times, because I do a lot of time on the road. And I listened to stuff on my iPod, and for a long time I was downloading Flashpoints every day, a radio program out of KPFA in Berkeley, California. And Dar was, I think, on that program just about every day for about a year. So I haven't listened to it in a while, so I'm not sure. But it was fantastic. That was Dar was the main reason I was listening to that program, because they always managed to find people like him who are actually on the ground in places where they were doing stories.
Singer, songwriter, and activist David Rovix is currently on a worldwide tour. He was in Connecticut September 20th, where he appeared at Wesleyan University with journalist Dar Jamail. He heads to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for concerts at events held there during the G20 talks. We asked him if his Connecticut appearance with Dar Jamail at Wesleyan University held any special significance for him.
Well, it's always significant to be in Connecticut for me because I grew up in Connecticut. So I get to come see lots of friends and family every time I'm there. Dar Jamail is a fantastic journalist and activist and has taken risks that most people wouldn't be willing to take and has come out alive and has great insight into the situation in Iraq, and also has just done fantastic and very important reporting on all kinds of things that have happened under the horrendous, unspeakably brutal occupation by the United States military of that country. And he's uncovered things that might not be known and other things that very few people ever, I think he was the only journalist to make it into Fallujah at one point. And, you know, if it weren't for people like Dar Jamail, then, you know, we wouldn't know Fallujah as a city that's been destroyed, where so many of the people there have been killed by our chemical weapons. That city is a ghost town still, and it's because of people like Dar that we know what the U.S. military has done there. At least we know a little bit of it.
You know, there's a story in Asheville Global Report, and it starts with a title. I guess it's A Voice of Resistance, and I want to ask you about that, because the title of Dar Jamail's new book is The Will to Resist, soldiers who refused to fight in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Great.
Once you start reading it and, you know, your view, once again, and this is typical of a lot of Dar Jamil's material, once you've read it, your perspective changes yet again, because you start to see that even though we might assume that GIs in general, you know, are very supportive of the war, obviously there are some and maybe many, but there are also many who support resistors. And there are soldiers now doing what was very often the case in Vietnam, kind of going on fake patrols, even tricking satellite positioning software to kind of not go on patrol. These are all acts of resistance. There are acts of resistance, both large and small, in the book, you know, and of course, GIs in prison. And so that is the theme. I just wonder about your perspective on the U.S. military. It's kind of hard to sum that up, I know, but...
I think that most of the soldiers really are basically in a state of fear, not wanting to get killed and basically, you know, hoping they survive. I mean, I think the gung-ho, let's go kill the Arabs kind of sentiment is certainly there, but I think it has really diminished tremendously. I mean, of course, this is not to say that war crimes are not being committed by American troops daily in Iraq, but the sentiment that was so widespread, that sort of patriotic, kill the Arabs kind of sentiment, is, I think, really what was in full swing for about a year after 9/11. And after that, it really decreased markedly, I'd say, among the rank-and-file soldiers, at least to the extent that I have any. You know, I have fans in the military, and I hear from soldiers fairly often and their spouses, and I got a lot of hate mail for about a year after 9/11. And after that, I almost entirely stopped getting hate mail. And even the hate mail that I was getting, within three email exchanges, they'd be agreeing with everything I was saying. I mean, you know, it was all the hate mail, and I've heard this from so many other people, progressives and people involved with this kind of stuff. It always boils down to they think that we hate them. You know, they think that we think that all the soldiers should be killed or something like that, you know. And once they figure out that we're on their side, we want them to survive and we just want them to stay home and not get hurt and not hurt anybody else, you know, then it's all, everything turns around. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, we'd like that too, actually, you know.
Once you start a conversation.
Yeah, that's right. But since 2002 or so, I haven't even needed to start those conversations. But then again, of course, that's also because, unfortunately, it's always a challenge to get people who have those kinds of pro-war views to hear my music in the first place, or to read Dar Jamil's books or articles in the first place. I mean, people come across artists like me and journalists like him oftentimes once they've already been clued in to these things, you know. And it may be, and it often is, that Dar is going to be the first journalist that they've ever come across that was making sense, and maybe that, you know, I'm the first musician they ever heard that was thinking about this stuff. There's always a first. It happens somewhere, whether it's Dar or me, or more likely, you know, Amy Goodman or Noam Chomsky, or somewhere that they run into it, you know, the Sex Pistols, and then from there they find out about all this other stuff. You know, once they discover the Clash or whatever, if they're living in the U.S., they eventually, pretty soon thereafter, they're going to discover Democracy Now! And Dar Jamil, and it'll tend to be a cascade effect, you know. You discover the first one or two slowly, and then you discover everything else. But it's always, I think, a challenge, and I imagine Dar would agree, to actually get this stuff out there. A lot of people in Europe tend to be a lot more aware of what's happening in Iraq today, and a lot more aware of what's happening in other parts of the world as well than the average American, which is not surprising given that most people in this country are not listening to Democracy Now! And to the alternative media. They are, unfortunately, you know, listening to the corporate stuff, which is pretty well worthless. And in Europe, what we would call the mainstream media is far, far better than our so-called mainstream media. Of course, I prefer to use the term corporate media, it's more appropriate, but there they actually do have state-owned, fairly independent media. I mean, you know, there's such a world of difference between BBC and NPR, or between, you know, Radio Deutsche Welle, or it still has a ways to go before it's as good as Democracy Now! Or something like that, but it leads to a population that's far better informed than the average people here, who I think, yeah, I mean, Iraq hasn't been in the headlines in the media outlets that most people are paying attention to, and so it becomes something that people assume, oh, everything must be okay. But it's actually been some of the most violent months in the history of the occupation of Iraq in the past few months, and it's getting a little bit of coverage, but not much.
I know NPR every once in a while will do one of these stories about 100 killed in one location or violence in Baghdad, and it's just so chilling to think that this has been going on since really 2003. I mean, we could say 2002, but I mean, really, it's been going on so long.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, it's now gone on far longer than at least the U.S. participation in World War II. Iraq has been bombed more savagely by the U.S. in the past 20 years than, any other country in history, as far as I know. In terms of non-nuclear weapons, I think Iraq actually has had more bombs dropped on it than all the sides of World War II combined. It's just another country just completely demolished by U.S. foreign policy, and it's one of so many countries. The U.S. has essentially been at war with the entire Asian continent for about 111 years or so, starting with the invasion of the Philippines in 1898, it really has never let up. That's pretty much at all points since then. The U.S. has been ravaging the lives of some Asian country since then, bombing somebody or occupying somebody or massacring somebody's civilian population. It's pretty much been an unending stream of stuff like that. And Iraq and Afghanistan are the latest victims.
I want to talk about the music that you're sharing at these events. Are you sharing music that people are all familiar with now and they know and they can sing along? Or are you working on different versions or new stuff? Or where are things at with David Rovix and his music?
Well, this being a radio show, you might want to play some, right? But
We absolutely will. I have some.
I'm doing my own songs mainly, not stuff that everybody would know, but everybody who listens to my music would know it. I certainly often have audiences singing along with every lyric and other audiences who have never heard the stuff before. But I got a new CD, two new CDs coming out, actually. One that I just recorded that's all new songs and poems, and another that's a sort of a retrospective CD. And I'll be doing a lot of my newer material mixed in with some older stuff. And certainly I write, a lot of my songs are, most of them are political in one way or another, but some of them are funny and others are more ballads about faraway places and times and closer ones as well. And then there's some love songs mixed in.
And the name of your new CD is?
The name of it is going to be 10,000 Miles Away. It's all solo acoustic, so it has that kind of sound to it, but it's brilliantly recorded at this wonderful studio outside Portland, Big Red Studio. Engineer, producer named Billy Oske. And it has the stuff. When I was just in Australia and New Zealand, I wrote a whole bunch of songs, and still have some of those songs and other songs that I've written in the past year or two and haven't recorded, and other stuff that I wrote years before but never got around to recording. If you hear a small voice in the background, that's my 3-year-old daughter. I told her we had to be quiet for a radio interview, but there's limits to these things.
Is that the one that I saw on the pirate section of your website, David Rovix?
Yeah, that's right. That's her. Yeah, although in that picture she was like 2, probably. 2.5.
What a cute girl. And
I agree.
Yeah. Does she help you write songs? Just like, shall we say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially the children's songs. She's been my main inspiration for that. I've got a whole lot of children's songs now. I did a CD last summer of children's music.
How is that doing?
I haven't gotten much of a foothold in the children's music scene, and I barely do any children's shows, but I sell a few of those CDs, and so it's a worthwhile project.
Just tell us one title, if you would, from your new album.
One is the song for the Eureka Stockade, which is basically the picture on the cover of the CD is related to that. It's going to have a Eureka flag on it. And in so many ways, I think this story is just the sort of story that I fall for, that I like to write about, and that I find so inspiring in so many ways. This is a story of basically people from 23 different nations who descended on Australia during the 1851 gold rush, 2 years after the big gold rush in California. And a lot of the folks that went there were from California, as well as folks from Ireland and all over Europe and Asia and lots of other places. There's this gold rush in Australia, and basically the authorities didn't like having all these gold miners coming in from all over the world. And so they basically made life for them impossible. And the miners rebelled. And as a result of this rebellion, Australia was the first country in the world to have the 8-hour day and a lot of other things. Didn't make it to anywhere else until like 50 years later.
Okay, I guess there's probably tickling going on in the background here, but...
Yeah, she's chasing me.
Okay. David Rovics, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dory.
From every corner of the world, they came from all around. When in 1851, they struck gold upon the ground. Every voyage was a long one, months upon the stormy sea. Some to seek their fortune, others escaping slavery. What they found on the gold fields was rule by brutish thugs, discrimination and taxation mixed with swinging billy clubs. The gold was getting scarcer and cops were getting worse. The diggers burned their licenses and vowed to end this curse. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations, they gathered here as one in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. The crown tried to divide them, giving preference to some. The diggers wouldn't have it. They said it's all of us or none. They built a stockade while the redcoats massed nearby, and they heard the miners shouting, "We're ready now to die." The rebel miners waited for whatever lay in store, and on one December morning in 1854, the redcoats attacked the camp. Dozens there would fall amongst these brave gold diggers who'd risen to the call. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations, they gathered here as one in Ballarat beneath the southern sun. The army thought it was over and things go their way. But when 15,000 miners rallied a month later on the day, the crown conceded everything, all of their demands. They'd won an end to license fees, the right to vote and land. So here's to Joe and Charlie, Waller and the rest. They drew the battle lines and put crown rule to the test. The diggers may have lost the battle, but they quickly won the day. And those shots fired in Victoria were heard 10,000 miles away. They swore an oath beneath the Southern Cross. They'd stand together and break the license laws. From 20 different nations, they gathered here as one in Ballarat beneath the southern sun.
David Rovics. You can listen to his new music and purchase CDs at davidrovics.com. We heard Fallujah, written in 2008, and from David Rovics' new album, 10,000 Miles Away, we heard Brad, for Brad Will, a journalist shot to death at Oaxaca City, October 27th, 2006, and then World of Broken Dreams. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. Write to us at talknationradio@gmail.com or try our website talknationradio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions. Our regular music is by Fritz Heed, fritzheed.com.